Good afternoon. It is Monday, February 26, 2024, and I call this meeting of the Veterans and Military Affairs Finance and Policy Committee to order. We do have a quorum present. First of all, I would like to ask Representative Norris if you had a chance to look at the minutes and if you would review them for us and move them.
Chair Newton, I move the approval of the minutes from the February 19th meeting.
All in favor of moving the minutes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the minutes are approved. Next, we'll do the Pledge of Allegiance. Representative Hudella, if you would lead us in the pledge, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. The first item on our agenda today is a presentation from the Military Department of Veterans Affairs, and I would like to welcome Commissioner Lindsay, newly appointed Commissioner Lindsay, to the committee, and if you would, sir, introduce yourself and go ahead with the presentation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Committee members, I'm Brad Lindsay. I'm, the chair said, I'm the new commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. I'm actually have been with the department since about 1999, working through different areas. I was a deputy commissioner of programs and services for the last 9+ years. In the last year, I also had the distinct privilege of also serving as the interim deputy commissioner of veterans healthcare. So I'm the only person who's ever held both of those deputy commissioner roles. So I am a veteran of the U.S. Army and the U.S. Army Reserve, and I served in Operation Iraqi Freedom in 2003-2004. So pleasure to be here and a pleasure to be given this opportunity to continue serving our veterans.
Good. Thank you, Commissioner. And if Mr. Johnson is here, I see as well, if you would like to introduce yourself.
Sure. Chair Newton, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to present today. My name is Ben Johnson. I am the agency's legislative director and have been serving as the interim deputy commissioner for programs and services since October of last year. I joined the agency in 2014, so coming up on my 10th anniversary. I've been doing the legislative leadership role for about the last 8.5 years. So active duty member of the United States Navy, deployed 3 times in support of the post 9/11 operations, twice to the Middle East, once to South America. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. I'm looking forward to working with you as the session moves forward.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson, and we also have Deputy Commissioner Eric Mittenen. If you would introduce yourself, Deputy Commissioner.
Chair Newton, thank you. Members, thank you for the opportunity to be here today and to, the opportunity to introduce myself. I'm Eric Mittenen, National Guard, Minnesota National Guard veteran, and also a veteran of the First Gulf War, Desert Storm, and Desert Shield as well. I've come to the I bring about 30 years of healthcare experience in different roles, from safety, risk management, ergonomics, human factors engineering, and consulting roles as well, to the table in order to help our veterans in our veterans' homes as well. So thank you very much for this opportunity. It's a pleasure to be here.
Welcome to all of you. And are you going to lead the presentation, Commissioner?
I'm going to have Ben lead off with that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson.
Chair and members, thank you again for the opportunity. You will be hearing from us again later in the session with some of our policy initiatives and priorities. Those were jacketed. Chair, thank you very much for picking those up. What we're going to do today is focus on the successes that you helped enable from last year's session. So this is just a recap of where the agency is at, really talking about some of the implementation and organization that has happened as a direct result of the support of the Minnesota Legislature and Governor Walz. So we'll talk first about some of our new facilities that have come online within the last 12 months and a project that we are on the initial stages of planning for the Hastings campus upgrade near and dear to Chair Newton's heart, I know. I'll turn it over to Commissioner Lindsay to talk through some of the celebrations that we've been able to have over the last 12 months.
Commissioner?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So one of the things when I moved into this role in the interim or acting position last year was stepping into a position where we had four capital projects going on, four major facilities being built. I'm pleased to announce that those are all complete. The State Veterans Cemetery, Redwood Falls, we held our dedication ceremony for that on August 19th of last year. If you were out there, it was probably the hottest day that we could have ever picked. Even the undersecretary for the VA commented on that this past week. Also, our three new veterans homes are open. Our goal with those are to admit 20 to 24 residents, and then we'll pause for a VA recognition survey. We don't actually start getting per diem from the VA for those residents until we pass the recognition surveys. So we're also pursuing our CMS or Medicare certification application in the next 6 months. For the dates, Preston opened to residents on January 3rd and has right now 17 residents, and we've requested a VA survey in April. For Montevideo, we opened on January 22nd, and we will be at 20 veterans by the end of this week, and we have a confirmed VA survey dates between March 20th and the 22nd. And then lastly, Bemidji opened on February 13th, and we have 18 residents admitted there, and we're also requesting a VA recognition survey come April. We're planning official dedication celebrations after the end of session for each of those locations. They're kind of spread out, and we're trying to work with, of course, you understand, working with all the different legislative folks and with the congressional delegation and with the governor's office to try to pin down exact dates for those, but we'll keep you posted on that. Lastly, one thing we received last session was the $77.8 million in capital investment funding for the facility at Hastings. Hastings is the main location for our domiciliary program. It's one of those that's an old state hospital. The buildings are kind of beyond their useful life, and we're looking to fully replace that facility with those funds. We're currently waiting. That is the state's portion of the funds, or 35%. We're currently on the waiting list for federal funding, which will fund the other 65% of that cost. And that's what I have on that one, Ben. Thank you.
Thank you. Veterans homelessness, Mr. Johnson.
Chair Newton, thank you again. And thank you for all of the support that this committee has given to the goal of ending veterans homelessness in the state of Minnesota. So as of through calendar year 2023, you'll see that first bullet, 545 veterans found safe permanent housing. As of this morning, 254 veterans are on the Homeless Veterans Registry. Those are individuals currently experiencing homelessness. This is down from more than 300 on the registry at this time last year. We are proud to announce that 8 out of the 10 continuums of care in the state of Minnesota have declared functional zero. So functional zero does not mean that homelessness is done or gone. It simply means that a veteran who is experiencing homelessness, a bout of homelessness is rare, brief, and non-recurring. It means that our communities have resources available to house someone as quickly as possible when they come to our attention. We are excited to be announcing another major COC declaration sometime this year, working through that process. And the goal, again, is 10 out of 10 of the continuums in the state of Minnesota to have a declaration of functional zero in order to achieve statewide end to veterans homelessness. A couple of items, those next two bullets, again, are the dedication and commitment of this committee, the governor's leadership, as well as our partners in the other chamber. The Veterans Entering Stable Tenancy, that MINVEST, and the Minnesota Supportive Housing Options VSHO, as we call it, are two opportunities for us to partner with the community to find a safe, secure housing for our veterans, make sure that they have the services that they deserve in order to be successful, and then eventually transition into permanent housing of their own and the community. And finally, the SOAR program, which is another portion of our homelessness effort, is the pursuit of SSI and SSDI. So it's partners, MDVA working with our veterans in the community to ensure that they have that bridge, that they can secure the Social Security disability benefits to help them stabilize their financial situation and get on the path to secure housing. And I would be remiss if I didn't call out and applaud this team. You can see that 2022 pillars, the MinVest and VSHO were recipients of the Abraham Lincoln Pillars of Excellence for Innovation in Ending Veterans Homelessness. That is a recognition by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs and is vetted by the National Association of State Directors of Veterans Affairs. This is a very prestigious award, and I'm really excited about the recognition we received last week. We received the SOAR program. The SOAR program received a Pillar of Excellence last year. We are now tied with only California, with only one state ahead of us in the number of pillars that have been received by the states. They only give, what would we say, six or seven in any given year, out of all 50 states. So just kudos to the team. We've got some of the team members in the audience here today that have really been leading and leaning into this effort to end veterans homelessness and find solutions for our veterans and their families.
Good, thank you, Mr. Johnson. The Soldiers Assistance Program.
This is a celebration that we are also extremely proud of. The State Soldiers Assistance Program celebrated 100 years of existence last year. So SSAP actually predates MDVA. It was created in 1923 as a solution to issues challenging veterans of the First World War. And I was reminded this morning, only the Minneapolis Veterans Home pre-exists the SSAP in terms of veteran services for the state of Minnesota. Of course, the Minnesota Veterans Home started its life as the home for veterans as a result of the conflict in the South and the American Civil War. So Civil War veterans were served there. We've grown and evolved. I think that the programming there, we are continuing to look at opportunities to improve or expand. We did a very comprehensive survey. We did a process last year where we brought in stakeholders and partners to identify where we could pivot to, where are some better opportunities to serve veterans. And then we also did outreach to the community. And so there were actual hundreds of veterans were able to weigh in and talk about what they've utilized in SSAP, what they would like to see more of. And we are making changes there. Some changes that have gone into effect recently are going through the rules process, but we have increased the amount available, tied the amount available through some of these grants to inflation, tried to make them more responsive to the existing conditions in the markets. And really, the dental and optical disaster relief grants, short-term disability education, these are areas where we partner with the community, and that county veteran service offices are the primary location for veterans across the state to access the State Soldiers Assistance Program. And finally, a little bit of a rebranding. We've gone away from this special needs grant. We're now calling it the Veterans Relief Grant. The Veterans Relief Grant is available for veterans with an emergency need. The example that we typically give is a furnace has gone out and we don't have the financial resources to replace it ourselves. And some of the changes there really are to pivot and make that foundational change in someone's finances available. And it's not just a check. Typically, we ask those veterans to work with a financial counselor or work with our partners at Lutheran Social Services to make sure that it is a change in their actual capacity to manage themselves and their resources, not just a grant and out the door. Happy to answer any questions there. And I also have some subject matter experts in the crowd who would be happy to help if there are specific questions.
Are there any questions of the testifier? No, seeing none, why don't we move on to the service bonus program?
Certainly. And I'll pass this one back over to Commissioner Lindsay.
All right. Thank you, Ben, Mr. Chair. So, as you know, starting in the 2022 session, and then we rolled it out about July 7th of 2022, we started taking applications for the post 9/11 service bonus. We were... to date, we have received 26,826 applications. We've approved 22,461. So we've expended about $23.5 million of the funding we were originally given. We're currently receiving approximately 100 applications per week, and we're processing those within 2 business days. I was telling Ben before the hearing, I did a little more of a rundown on some of our numbers, so, and some comparisons. So based on our projected numbers that we'd received from the Department of Defense, there were about 48,600 post-9/11 veterans in the state that would have qualified for this. To date, we've served through those bonuses 46% of that number. For comparison, the Persian Gulf War bonus projections versus actual was also 46%. So we've hit where Persian Gulf finished. So we're going to exceed that. Another interesting note, and going back and talking to my staff a little more about this, maybe it's a little change in our campaign and our publicity, but we've hit 66% of those who actually served in a deployment or received a campaign medal. But we're at only about 23% of those who didn't, those who may have been at Fort Campbell or in Germany or something during that time, but actually didn't serve in one of the theaters of war. So I think we have a little more work to do there to get that out to that group, and that should boost our numbers up by the end of the year. And that's all I have on that, Mr. Chair, pending any questions.
I believe Representative Clarity has a question.
Great program. Thank you. Just curious, could you explain or talk to how you put it out to the qualifying applicants? And then at some point, can we get some information on demographics as far as who's actually participating in it versus who's been outreached to?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Madam Representative, on the demographics, we're probably, I don't know, Ben, maybe you could help out what we're collecting on that through our VAT system. But primarily our communications have been through a lot of social media. We've paid to have things highlighted in social media, LinkedIn, Facebook, all of those things, because, you know, this is a younger veteran demographic, so we think that's probably the most successful. Also, a lot of outreach through our county veteran service partners, who themselves are doing outreach and advertising in their local communities to get that word out. Yeah, we can get you back, and I can let you know what we have on the actual demographics. The only thing I have with me right now is those who served in country versus those who served in general, but we can get that, ma'am.
Thank you, Commissioner Lead Bliss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. Yeah, the amount of money that was initially allotted to this was a guess based on projections. Where do we stand on how much money is left over?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative. So the original projection, yeah, was 48,603, and as I said, we've now served 22,000 of those. We had, where did I write that down? What was the initial allocation? Do you remember?
It was two tranches of funding between over two years. True. We expanded the amount available when we added eligibility for non-Minnesota entrants to the military. It had been initially limited to only people who had started their service in Minnesota, and then we added the additional campaign ribbon, which I think we estimated only added about 600 resident veterans, or 600 new types of veterans. I apologize, I don't have that number with me, but I think we're looking at now that we have used, we have used, what, 23 and a half? I think we still have about, yes, 9.5 or 10 left. So we are really making a push for the last 3 months of this. Applications are available through the end of this fiscal year, so through the end of June. We can continue to process those, but there will be some appropriation left over. Again, it was an estimate based on the number that we believe were in the state of Minnesota initially, added some who came here after their initial enlistment, so they chose Minnesota. But in terms of funding left over, our goal is to expend as much as possible, but I'll be frank, sir. I don't know that we'll expend every penny.
Good, thank you. Are there any other questions? No, if we could move on then to the 50th anniversary program.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. So we were given some funding, of course, last session again for a 50th anniversary commemoration of the Vietnam War. This has been an ongoing, like a 10-year initiative through the federal side and through the Department of Defense. So this is kind of our big culmination of that for Minnesota. I believe we were given $250,000 to plan this and put this together. So we established a working group from various veterans, mostly Vietnam veterans, and then our own staff to give us input and decide how we wanted to go about this. So different than past wars that we've commemorated on the Capitol grounds, this one's actually going to take place at Mall of America. So we're not going to have to worry about weather. We're not going to have to worry about access and transportation and parking and things like that. So that is planned now. The celebrations will go from the 13th to the 15th, with the main ceremony being on Friday the 14th, which is Flag Day in the Mall Rotunda. We're going to have the Minnesota Military and Veterans Museum there, and they're going to be providing displays. We're talking about getting in a Huey helicopter into the building, which is, you know, kind of the iconic symbol of the Vietnam War. So I think they'll push it in, not fly it, hopefully. We're also bringing in a replica of the Vietnam Wall, which is something we've done in the past, a replica of the one out in D.C. We're going to have hopefully documentaries like the Ken Burns type documentaries playing up in the movie theaters that those veterans will be able to go in and watch at their leisure. And of course, then the big piece for this with us is resource booths, making sure MDVA and VA and all of our other partners out there are set up and providing information and resources to those veterans who may not still be aware of what all exists for them in the state of Minnesota.
Good, thank you. Yes, Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was not aware that this is going to be at the Mall of America, which is in my district, but we're certainly grateful to have you there and just wanted to extend a personal invitation. We're always happy to welcome folks to the Mall of America and welcome you to contribute to our local economy as well.
Thank you for the commercial, Representative.
Thank you.
If we could move on to suicide prevention, please.
Chair.
Yes, Mr. Hedman.
Thank you for the opportunity, and also thank you for the vision and the support for this particular program, which is of utmost importance for our veterans. We have had a lot of work being accomplished since I've arrived at the MDVA in the healthcare side, and we're excited to share that we are hiring a new position, which is funded through your organization, through your committee, which is the Director of Veterans Community Health. And in this position, that person will lead the health navigators, which will be embedded in non-VA health systems across the state, and help the veterans when they are in times of need, when they present to the EDs of these health systems, and when they are inpatients as well. So we're really excited about this opportunity. And we're using the data and analytics around this because we realize that those veterans who are connected to VA resources have a much lower risk of suicide. So this is really something that is really going to help us with our prevention of suicide in the future for these veterans. We are also quite excited because we're working directly with our fellow agencies across the state, including the Minnesota Department of Health, and the VAs, the federal VA, and then DHS as well. So we're really excited how we're collaborating together on a periodic basis in order to share resources. We're focused on the prevention of suicides for the veteran population, and others are across the state are focused on the suicide prevention for others within the state for non-veterans, and we're collaborating in order to help us move forward with regards to a reduction in this particular important area. The goals for the plan are to improve and expand and coordinate suicide prevention infrastructure, of which I've mentioned some of those actions, and then prevent Minnesotans from having suicidal experiences and impose on their lives. We're also using data and analytics more so in the past few months, where we are looking at the numbers of veterans throughout the state by county. We're also evaluating the numbers of veteran suicides that we have in those counties, and then we are really trying to make sure that we're having events and engagements in those counties where we can really make a difference in the lives of those veterans and their family members in those communities. As a part of that, we are planning to have our Veterans Suicide Awareness and Prevention event in October in St. Louis County this year.
Thank you, Mr. Mettner. I actually have a question, and I read an article recently that showed that we have more younger veterans committing suicide. Is that part of a national trend in suicides, that the younger people are committing suicide now?
For us in Minnesota, when we look at our data, it's middle-aged white men who are in central Minnesota and north. That's northern Minnesota, that where we're seeing more of our suicides occurring. But it is a new trend where we're seeing younger and younger veterans committing suicide as well. We're really trying to reach out to other organizations in order to partner and create fellowship and opportunities where we can help them to accomplish and see the recognize the opportunities around buddy checks and really looking after one another and then helping them to navigate to resources as well or seek the help that they need with our phone numbers and then our resources that we have too.
Good, thank you. Mm-hmm. Representative Wilson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's not a question. It's more like a statement to the committee. You know, last year we, in our budget, we spent a lot of money on veteran homelessness. That was kind of the theme from last year's budget. My hope is that next year when we move into a new budget cycle, that we focus a lot of attention on soldier suicide. Yeah. This is an issue that, you know, it's not just veterans we're talking about. My battalion has lost a number of soldiers over the past couple of years as well. So this is something that I think we really need to focus on. Not that homelessness is not a huge issue as well. We fought it last year. Let's fight another fight next year. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments? Okay. I think we have the other veterans' health care issues, Mr. Mittman.
Okay. We are really proud of the opportunities that you have given us to open three new veterans' homes across the state in Fergus Falls, in Bemidji, Montevideo, and Preston. And we have won many awards in the past few months as a result of the work, our great leadership, and wonderful staff that we have in our homes. And this slide just articulates a few of those many accomplishments and achievements that we have benefited from in the past, including the new administrators. We've hired new administrators at five of the Minnesota nursing homes, including in Bemidji, Hastings, Minneapolis, Montevideo, and Preston. We have continued to focus on healthcare recruitment and retention as a part of our goal to provide access and the best staff to serve our mission and our veterans. We've also recently completed successfully our domiciliary working group and submitted a report to the legislature on January 16th. And we're really pleased with those results because those suggestions or the recommendations by the domiciliary working group will be included in our roadmap for the future of our domiciliary programs, both in Hastings and in Minneapolis as well. So they are going to be a part of our processes in incorporating those results and those recommendations into our practices in the future. We're really proud of those opportunities.
Good, thank you. Mm-hmm. Are there any questions, any closing comments or questions? Mm-hmm.
Chair, could I just add one item? We are really proud of the Veteran Suicide Awareness and Prevention Program moving forward, and we are also really happy to learn about our success with homelessness and ending homelessness, functional homelessness within the MDVA agency. And those two are really tied to one another, and we are appreciative of the support that you have given us for both of those programs. When veterans are in need of, particularly for the social determinants of health, like homelessness, economic support, and other social determinants of health, it is really wonderful that we have opportunities or programs to serve those veterans and overall then reduce the risk of suicide prevention. Suicide.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you all. About the veterans' homes and sort of how the staffing shortages has impacted, I know it's impacted the Minneapolis Veterans Home, which is in my district, and so I'm there more, but I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about what that looks like today and some of the impacts it's having.
That's a great question. Thank you, Madam Representative. Chair Newton, we have had good success with recruiting and staffing as compared to other organizations in the long-term care industry. For example, just last week I attended and introduced myself to our latest new employee orientation team at our group at our Minneapolis Veterans Home. And after I introduced myself to them, I asked how they heard about us at MDVA and our healthcare team. And 80% of those indicated that friends and family, referrals to the openings that we have within our organization. That means a lot. That means that our staff are so satisfied that they would actually suggest to another, a loved one or friends or other family members, that this is a good place to work. And that is how we're moving forward. We've done a number of campaigns on social media, as with other parts of our program, but that is where we really need to be focused on, is those who know us best, and they would like their friends and family to join us as well.
Good, thank you, Commissioner. Representative Greenman.
Thank you. I just had one other question, and really appreciate that update, because I know that both the staff that care for our vets and also making sure that we have enough staff means that we can use all our beds, which is my second question in terms of, and this might you might not have, or maybe you do, Ben, but do you have a sense of our waiting lists and both for the metro and greater Minnesota about how many folks are waiting and how long those waiting lists are in terms of beds?
Mm-hmm. We have
Commissioner, please.
We have a waiting list in all of our homes. And so considering that we have 300 beds, we're licensed for 300 beds on our Minneapolis campus. Of course, we have a waiting list of several hundred there. For our newer homes, because we're just opening now with and started to admit, we have a waiting list of over 100 in each of those homes as well. I will say that our leaders, those who I just announced in our homes, and other staff like our directors of nursing, are really aware of this opportunity, and we are adding staff, and we are adding to our census then as well. I think that Minneapolis home in particular, our goal is to be over 200 at 270 in the near future. I think that last week we're at 266. So we're making a big difference in the waiting list by adding staff, by opening beds that have been open for some time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Or unoccupied for some time. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Well, thank you all for the presentation, and I believe we're going to be hearing from Mac V now, but thank you very much for coming over. And if you would, stick around for a while in the event that something comes up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good afternoon. See here there's Nathaniel Saltz is with us, and you're accompanied by
Sarah Regal, Vice President of Property Operations for McPhee.
Okay. Mr. Saltz, if you would introduce yourself and then move ahead with the presentation, please.
Absolutely. Thank you. Chair Newton and committee members, my name is Nathaniel Saltz, and I'm the Chief Program Officer for the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, MACV. We are a 501c3 statewide nonprofit with the mission to end veteran homelessness in Minnesota. We pursue our mission in cooperation with local, state, and federal organizations who partner in our work in support of housing, housing subsidies, and holistic case management. This collaboration has led to effective state investments for supportive housing acquisition, VSHO, and vouchers, MINVEST, that have Minnesota on a track to end veteran homelessness by the end of 2025. As we edge nearer to this goal, MACV is already reflecting on how to keep ahead of the curve and push forward to address the evolving needs of Minnesota's veterans as this increased state investment approaches its end. Today, we are excited to share the plans already in motion to usher in the next chapter of how we reach and maintain the effective end of veteran homelessness in our state. Some of MACV's most notable achievements from the last year include preventing over 1,200 veterans from becoming homeless, ending periods of homelessness for close to 500 veterans, and providing housing at MACV properties to 175 veterans. Minnesota is determined to become the fourth state in the union to achieve functional zero veteran homelessness, a goal we have set with our state and federal partners to achieve by the end of 2025. 8 of Minnesota's 10 homeless continuum of cares, COC regions, have met these benchmarks, and we are closing in on Hennepin County and anticipate reaching this milestone in 2024 and then Ramsey in 2025. As excitement builds around achieving functional zero in the final two COCs, we have to remember how critically important it is to sustain the progress made. Responding to the increased need for services in the aftermath of COVID-19, MACV launched its state-funded MINVEST program in 2022, which provides two-year rental subsidy vouchers paired with clinical case management for veterans who are unable to access federal VA's HUD-VASH subsidy or other housing interventions because of eligibility or availability. The possibility for client program extensions currently exists beyond the initial two-year voucher period on a case-by-case basis. MINVEST has served 126 veterans since April 2022, with 93 currently active participants. Of the 126 veterans served, 62% are over the age of 55 and of low fixed incomes. Data from the Minnesota Homeless Veteran Registry indicates a need to enroll 50 to 60 additional veterans in MINVEST by the end of 2024. Unfortunately, MACV's initial MINVEST contract will end on June 30, 2025. This will effectively cease our ability to enroll new veterans into the program and limit the extensions available for veterans without other options for stable housing. And we have concerns about losing the capacity to connect veterans in need with this very successful resource as soon as next year. As the first phase of our supportive housing development expansion starts to wind down, MACV recognizes the long-term need for continued support of our resident and property management teams in serving some of Minnesota's most vulnerable veterans moving forward. By providing deeply affordable, service-rich housing to low-income veteran households, an approach that does not easily lend itself to steady cash flow, MACV needs flexible funds to sustain our low-barrier housing operations. We want to emphasize the importance of housing partners like MDVA's VSHO program to ensure the successful operation of our supportive housing. MACV receives critical financial support from the state of Minnesota each year to pursue our goal. Our funding includes VSHO, MINVEST, funding through a program called Operation Over for outreach and case management. We leverage the VTEMP program for emergency hotel stays through MDVA, as well as the legislatively appropriated funds for direct financial assistance, which stabilizes veterans in housing through payments for rent, security deposits, utilities, and other key needs, a critical resource for preventing veteran homelessness. However, the relationship between MACV and the state is so much more than financial. The degree of partnership and coordination between MACV and the state of Minnesota has drawn national attention as a best practice in cross-sector relationships. MACV operates 225 beds of transitional and permanent supportive housing units statewide, including units still in the process of construction and rehab. MACV acquired 85 of those units with VSHO funds in just the past 2 years, which have been a tremendous support in developing housing geared towards serving veterans with the fewest private landlord options for housing. MACV has already started to consider what Minnesota veterans need to ensure their long-term housing stability in 2025 and beyond. As stated, one of the most important tools at our disposal for the progress made, the award-winning, as just stated, MinVest program, is set to have its first award period end as the state makes its final push to achieve functional zero next year. MACV will continue to communicate our needs and findings in connection to the future of MinVest and VSHO to MDVA as well as to this body as we approach the end of the grant terms. MACV utilizes numerous tools to track progress made towards achieving our mission. Minnesota's Homeless Veteran Registry, the HVR, operated by MDVA, allows MACV and our partners to keep count of veterans experiencing homelessness and share other key pieces of information that we need to effectively reach and serve these individuals. As a co-leader of the HVRP Collaborative, MACV was a service partner for approximately 89% of the veterans housed from the registry in 2023. As of today, there are 254 veterans on the HVR. In addition to being a critical source of data, interagency program staff from MACV, MDVA, local community partners, and federal VAMC homeless programs discuss each veteran on the list at biweekly meetings to ensure that plans for the veterans' housing stability are in place and being followed. The collaborative identifies one of the most common barriers to housing stability as an acute shortage of affordable rental housing units. Along with low income, many veterans on the registry have other barriers, which result in the denial of rental applications, even if they locate a unit within their income range. VSHO funds have allowed MACV to create housing to address the lack of suitable units to meet our veterans' needs. However, maintaining resident stability for the long term requires us to meet an increasing need for on-site and clinical services, particularly for aging and medically unstable veterans with low incomes. MACV continues engaging with our government partners to ensure that veterans can access the services needed for their long-term stability. I want to share the story of one veteran, whom I'll call Ruth, who contacted MACV after becoming homeless due to fleeing domestic violence. This honorably discharged veteran of the Minnesota National Guard was living in a vehicle in Greater Minnesota with her children. MACV quickly placed the family in a hotel as there was no immediate shelter available for them. While the veteran was not eligible for federal VA benefits, thanks to the MinVest program, MACV was able to assist Ruth in finding a unit with a subsidy so she could afford housing. We were able to negotiate this placement with the landlord utilizing the MDVA Landlord Incentive Program Homes for Veterans. Since moving into her residence, Ruth has gotten her GED, increased her income through both VA disability and employment, and is connected to mental health services. She's been housed for over a year, and her landlord plans to renew her lease for another year this May. Ruth's story and hundreds of others are possible because of the investments and partnerships represented in this room. Thank you for your support of Minnesota veterans and the opportunity to work together to ensure the continuity of the effort that we have begun.
Thank you, Mr. Saltz. I believe Representative Waynes has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Saltz, thank you for that report. And thank you, MACV, for the important work that you do in collaboration with MDVA and our local county folks and those other nonprofits that you work with. I am curious, as you you mentioned, and we're looking at this goal of functional net zero for homelessness, if we're going to take a look at the 2025, what your projection is of the homelessness issue with the progress that you're making and the trend lines, if you can tell us what the average cost is for a homeless veteran to be able to pull them out and then get them to a level where they are functionally able to take care of themselves, if you have that figure.
Mr. Sells.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a little bit of a complicated question depending on which program and funding streams that a veteran utilizes. If a veteran enters a federal HUD-VASH program, there may be very little cost to the state, but then they're utilizing a permanent subsidy with an increased level of clinical case management, while some veterans are using first month's rent, security deposit, some assistance in getting a job, and we may never see them again. But I can gather some data and send some information your way that might get towards what you're asking for, sort of a social return on investment look overhead at what we're investing into ending veteran homelessness, if that will help.
And just one follow-up, but thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Saltz. That's what I'm looking for, because as we take a look at this, we want to see progress. And if a particular program is not really yielding what we think it is, maybe it's time to move over to another program that's working. But based on your projections, and I heard something very interesting. It sounds like that population over 55 is you know, there's some people that are moving in where they need have some other needs. So I know it's kind of a complicated thing to do, but your projections are key for us as we consider what we're going to do for funding in 2025 to end veterans homelessness. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And I would appreciate it if you could send those to the committee as a whole.
Sounds good. Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Saltz. Are there any other questions or comments? If not, thank you for all you do. Thank you for what MACV does for our veterans.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members.
We will now move on to Representative Olson. So this is House File 3870, that Representative Olson's bill that we heard last week. We've decided this bill has to be brought forward in Capital Investment Committee. So if you would remind us, Representative Olson, what the bill pertains to, and then move your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill, 3870, talks about armories in the state of Minnesota, and it allows them to work in better coordination with cities and local entities in order to potentially build new armories, remove old ones, and jettison the land that they currently are using. That's essentially the gist of the bill, and so I would move that we move the bill that we heard last week to capital investment.
Representative Wilson moves that House File 3870 be referred to Capital Investment Committee. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the bill is referred to the Capital Investment Committee. Representative Weens. Representative Weens, I move that House File 3790 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. If you would address your bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Representative Mark Weens. I represent House District 41A and the good people of Washington County, and I move House File 3790. And if I could just have a little bit of time to explain the bill, and then also I just want to say thank you to all the Gulf War veterans. This is our 33rd anniversary of the 100-year war. It's amazing. It's gone so fast. In remembrance of my Desert Storm comrades in the 1st Armored Division, Old Ironsides, February 26, 1991, we were preparing for the greatest tank battle during that conflict. It was called the Battle of Medina Ridge, and in which we tore Saddam's elite Republican Guard units, the Medina Tank Division and the Adnan Motorized Division, a new one. Black Line strikes swiftly. But in such an epic victory, there is a cost. Some of those wounds are visible, some are invisible. From Desert Storm, we had the added environmental challenges of oil well fires, of particulates from burn pits, also from the detonation and explosion of Saddam's ammo compounds, which were filled not only with conventional munitions, but also with chemical and possibly biological, which has led to the various Gulf War diseases back a generation ago. Even in this lopsided victory, we came to realize that fratricide was a real and present danger, that blue-on-blue violence from above, behind, could impact you. And it is recorded that this is one of the highest instances of fratricide in U.S. military history. Other issues not just from this conflict, but that we've had over the past couple of wars are in a conflict zone is military sexual trauma as well as post-traumatic stress. Thank you all on the committee. Last year we worked hard to try to develop these metrics, and you all assisted. And a special thanks to co-author Chair Newton, as well as Mr. Holtquist and Mr. Diebel. I know he's on duty today, but he had a hand in writing this, and also my Gulf War comrade, Representative Shane Hudella. I lovingly refer to House File 3790 as the Veterans Accountability Act, which is being carried by Senator Lang, a veteran, in the Senate. My intent was and still is to drive after what is the most effective for Minnesota veterans and is accountable to our hardworking tax-paying citizens. I've requested a fiscal note. I believe that the MDVA is collecting a lot of this data already. However, this bill formalizes the reporting process for accountability, and I will note that it requires the nonprofits to provide the data to the MDVA. These success metrics are drawn for those who are the most deserving in our society, our veterans who have served and put everything online for us and their families. One reporting metric allows for those active duty personnel and their family members that are stationed in Minnesota to be able to participate in this program as a Minnesota resident. Also, for those Minnesota citizens that are serving elsewhere, that they can also participate, and that's an outlier in the report. Chair, fellow committee members, thank you so much. Look forward to your support for House File 3790 and for supporting our veterans.
Good. Thank you, Representative Weins. And I just wanted to add that I think MDVA might be weighing in on this bill as well and looking over it just to make sure that we get everything that we need to have in this bill and have it in there correctly. So with that, House File 3790 is laid over. Thank you, Representative Weins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in celebration, I have brought a Danish treat for the committee. It is almond kringle. They'll be passed around, and everybody can celebrate, and hua for the veterans. Mata tak.
You started a tradition here, you know.
Tradition. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Weins. Representative Hudella, House File 1666. I move that House File 1666 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Representative Hudella, if you'd identify yourself and address your bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Shane Hudella. House File 1666, maybe a little bit easier to explain in a quick story. So lots of veterans in the room, a couple that I know they're going to be testifying on some other bills today. So let's just say fellow veteran Brad Williams goes in to see his county veteran service officer to receive some of the assistance or benefits that he's earned. The CVSO's job is to help that veteran obtain those benefits, and many times that CVSO will need to go and pull a DD-214 or potentially a birth certificate or other records that are housed in the different counties around our state. Now, for that CVSO to go in and do that at the local county, what's happening is a lot of those counties are turning around and saying, hey, veteran service officer, you have to pay for that document. This bill simply says that CVSOs will be able to pull that vital record from the county without incurring a fee. It should not have any impact budget-wise on our state, and it's just the right thing to do. It's not a massive issue right now, but it is still happening. So the bill's easy. It just says, hey, counties, you're required to give these vital documents to county veteran service officers for free.
Good. Thank you, Representative Hudella. And I believe Mr. Baker is in the audience and wishes to testify. He stepped out. Okay, we have someone else that wishes to testify?
Yeah. Chair Newton and committee. Sure, my name is Greg Peterson. I am a county veteran service officer.
Okay.
And I've run into this where it's newly elected recorders, because they're going to be looking at their job title and all these different things, and they're going to tell the county veteran service officer there's a fee. Death certificate, $15. Birth certificate can be $27. Specifically in my county, I educated that recorder and let them know that we don't pay for it, although it's not in the law, though. So I kind of snowed them a little bit. But, so we have 165 service officers throughout the 87 counties, and it can vary depending who's reading the law. You'll see in the law, I don't have it in front of me, but it allows many different entities to receive the discharges or the birth certificates at no cost. Why county veteran service officers were not written in there originally, we don't know, but we need to be in there now.
Okay, good. Is there anyone else that would like to testify to this bill in the audience? Seeing none, and I know that Mr. Baker, who now chairs the group of county veteran service officers, strongly supports the bill and has talked to me about it, and I believe spoken with you as well, Representative Udella. So this is an important bill, actually, and it helps the families as well when they don't know where to turn to and they need a DD-214 or a birth certificate or whatever you might need in order to get the benefits that they're entitled to. So thank you both. The bill will be laid over, I believe.
And Mr. Chair, I'll just say one more thing. We always encourage veterans to have their DD-214s recorded. We could potentially have to pay for that to get it back from them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something that, a lot of veterans don't do, is have their 214s recorded. I hope all of you do have it recorded with your county so that it's available. Because in the event of a veteran's death, it's sometimes pretty hard for a family to scramble to try to find all the documents that they do need. So, that's a good point. Okay, so I renew my motion. Mr. Baker has stepped into the room. Mr. Baker, if you would like to add to the testimony. Please identify yourself for the record, Mr. Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is John Baker. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers. I introduced myself last week. And I've got a couple CVSOs with me today, and we definitely support this bill. This is what I look at is a fix to the current legislation, adding a CVSO to be able to get records. Now, one of the questions may be, well, how much is it going to cost? We don't know that, partially because there are jurisdictions around the state that give the CVSOs what they're asking for, in spite of the lack of the language in the current law. What I look at, Mr. Chair, and what my job is looking at reducing barriers for veterans getting benefits. We always talk about the delay for veterans getting benefits. You know, once they apply for disability benefits, it can take anywhere from 6 months to a couple years. And whatever little piece of the law that we can change to reduce that barrier, that's just going to make it quicker. Now, is this law going to change that exponentially? No, but it's just going to be one of those additional barriers that we look at to break down for a veteran getting their disability benefits and to make a CVSO job easier. So thank you, Mr. Chair. My apologies for stepping out.
No, that's fine. Thank you, Mr. Baker. Are there any questions at all? Good. No, the bill then is laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Hudella. And what do we have now? We have House File 3746, Representative Hill. Did he step out?
No, he's right here.
Okay. I see, Representative Hill, that you have a lot of testifiers and a lot of moral support there. So I just want to mention that we do have one more bill coming up. So if you'd keep the testimony to as brief as possible, but effective but brief. Representative Hill, your bill is House File 3746. We welcome you to the committee and would like to ask you to present your bill and identify yourself, please, for the audience.
Happy to. Thank you, Chair Newton, committee members. My name is Josiah Hill. I'm representing District 33B in the East Metro along the St. Croix River in Washington County. This proposal outlines how Hometown Hero Outdoors aims to allocate grant funds effectively moving forward to further its mission of providing services to military service members, veterans, and first responders. I want to thank Representative Weens and Representative Hudella and Clardy for co-authoring this bill and support. And as we move forward, I wanted to share just a brief 30-second synopsis of what these funds will be used for before I turn it over to Interim President Chris Tetrault here. Hometown Heroes Outdoors is a Stillwater, Minnesota-based 501c3 nonprofit organization, and it was created to fund outdoor recreational activities and mental health services for currently serving military and veterans to promote positive mental health in interaction with mental health service professionals. The appropriation will be used to support and expand their core mission of mental health, of providing outdoor experiences and providing mental health crisis intervention, as well as expanding outreach and growth. I'm now pleased to turn it over to Interim President Chris Tetrault, and he will share some additional details. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Mr. Chair, Committee, thank you for having me. All other co-authors as well, thank you very much. My name is Chris Tetrault. I am the Interim President for Hometown Hero Outdoors. I am a former Minnesota Red Bull. I was deployed to Bosnia in 2003 and with the 1st BCT in 2005. Hometown Hero Outdoors did start in Minnesota in 2017. We are on our sixth year. And we are based in Stillwater, Minnesota. And as the representative alluded to, we do outdoor recreational therapy for military service members, veterans, and first responders, specifically here today, obviously, for our military side. In the state of Minnesota, we have taken out over 1,800 people in the outdoors. And the goal for this is to take them out, get them off the couch, do something different, be able to unwind, help mental health. We are not mental health professionals. We are a group of peers that are here to support each other. And we create a long-standing relationship with individuals that help with mental health in the long run, and we are here for them to be able to call and communicate with. We have found that when we're out in the duck blind, out fishing, whatever it might be, hunting, ATVing, snowmobiling, we've done hot air balloon rides, dog sledding up north, all over the place, that the relationships that we have built is long-lasting, and people reach out to us when they're in a time of need for mental health. So one of the things that we began to implement in the organization is through our ASSIST training. ASSIST is called Applied Suicide Intervention Skills Training. We outfit our 100% volunteer staff with this type of training to engage in a crisis intervention when needed. We try to prevent things getting to there by doing the things in the outdoors, but this ASSIST training is here as a tool in our belt when someone may be suicidal or thinking about self-harm. What we aim to do, let me go back a little bit. Out of the organization, we have expanded to 28 states. Minnesota is our home base, like I said before. So we have taken over 5,000 people out nationally, but 1,800 in Minnesota here alone. Of that surveyed, we have taken over 70% out that are actually military veterans, and 10% are military service members in some form still. So we're a very active state. We have 25 volunteers here in the state. We're looking to gain more volunteers, but as I said before, no one makes a dime. But with what we're looking to do here for our appropriation is to be able to put money towards our outdoor activities, and 50% of that would be allocated just towards that. Being able to take more individuals in the outdoors, do different things that will help them in, with their mental health. 30% will be allocated to additional assist training, train the trainer situations where we can actually lean on our staff. We actually have a sergeant major who is with the Minnesota National Guard who in J9 who does the assist training with us. She's fantastic. Jen Chaffee, her husband's actually going to testify here shortly. And we want to engage with actual people who are mental health providers in the community. We're beginning to partner and work with other individuals. One of them is Abijah on the Backside, which is a thoroughbred horse type of health therapy that they're able to go out and engage with. But beyond that, 30% would go allocation for additional resources for mental health needs. 10% would go to outreach and growth. We would love to be able to streamline how we can get to other individuals in the military or veteran world. Our website is incredibly robust right now. We're looking to streamline that. And also help with application processes so individuals are able to be able to view what is on a phone application with our trips, adventures, and events, and potentially implement a crisis hotline that we can have through that app that's easy to get a hold of us. And then the other 10% would be for administrative costs. I'm proud to say that our admin costs are about 2.8% as of last year. They will rise slightly based on the fact that we just hired a team of 6 accountants that's going to help support us. But in a nutshell, that's who we are as an organization. I know that we have saved lives and relationships and rekindled relationships. Some of those members are sitting behind me today. So,
thank you, Mr. Tetrol. And next we have Mr. Ehrman, I believe, who would like to identify. If you'd identify yourself for the record, please.
Hi, my name is Chris Ehrman. I am the treasurer for Hometown Hero Outdoors. I'm also a St. Paul native. I grew up on St. Paul's east side. I've also leveraged several services that have been spoken about here today myself to include veteran homelessness and that through the Minnesota Council, Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans and through the Department of Veterans Affairs. As the treasurer, I hold the honor of protecting HHO's funds. And as my counterpart here just spoke, we hired an accounting firm called Abdo, and we have a team of 5 CPAs that are now helping us to accurately report and send up our 990s to the IRS. I'm proud to say that we have a 2.83% admin cost, and like Chris said, that is going to rise with the ever-growing need for our services, which is going to cost more money, and along with that is going to cause more accounting. And so I am here to say that also that we have the Platinum Seal of Approval from
Candid and GuideStar.
Candid and GuideStar, who actually we have worked with to verify all of the numbers that I've spoken about today. And we have a platinum seal of transparency, which puts us in 0.05% of nonprofits in the country. There's currently 7 million nonprofits registered with them. So we're in the top 5,000 in the nation. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Ehrman. Next, I believe Brian Chaffee is going to testify. Mr. Chaffee, could I identify yourself, please?
Thank you, Chair Newton and the rest of the committee. Brian Chaffee, recently retired from the Minnesota National Guard, spent 4 years Marine Corps active duty, and retired to Red Bull out of the Stillwater Armory. Married to a very lovely wife. She's a J-9 Sergeant Major for the state of Minnesota, and she volunteers her time to actually assist or teach the assist training that she goes to Texas. She's been to Colorado, so we save money getting her to travel all around. When I want something done at home, she always tells me, well, it's your turn because you sent me to Colorado last week. So, please bear with me. I'm going to talk about a few numbers here. Annual report on suicide in the military from the DOD under Secretary of Defense for Personnel Readiness was published in October. In 2022, 492 total service members took their lives. 331 were active, 64 reserve, 97 guard. So you're talking a battalion of service people, men and women, that took their lives. The scary numbers that I found while researching this, 168 family members also took their lives from the active duty side. 114 were spouses, 54 were dependents. Recent numbers from quarter three, July through September of 2023, active component 82, reserves 13, National Guard 26. So you're talking about a company per quarter that have ended their lives. It's very personal with me, just because we deal with it on a daily basis, weekly basis. At the dinner table, my wife got a call. She's been working with the Minnesota National Guard Suicide Prevention Program for since 2010, right before I deployed on my last deployment to Kuwait. I personally struggled with mental health after getting blown up in 2006 in Iraq. And there has to be different ways. Some people can go to counseling. Other things work for different people. But I've seen it firsthand that there has to be alternative resource programs. Whether people don't want to see weak, don't want to seem vulnerable, or don't want to ask for help, there has to be other programs out there. In HHO, that's where I found my calling. I became a member in 2018, became field staff in 2020, and I just recently took over as the regional director for the nation. So I deal with everything from North Dakota, South Dakota, all the way to the East Coast. So it is something that I'm super proud of, for the fact that it's all volunteer. None of our volunteers get paid. They do it out of the goodness of their hearts. And you're talking of thousands and thousands and thousands of volunteer hours per year that we pour into this. So I appreciate your time and consideration to supporting HHO. And pending any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chafee. We'll move to Mr. Mossberg. Or Mr. Kuhn, whoever's ready. And please be brief. We do have one more bill with testifiers coming up.
Chairman of Committee, again, my name is Eric Mossberg. I'm a retired staff sergeant and served for just under 12 years. I'm also a recent amputee due to a service-related injury. I was introduced to Hometown Heroes before my amputation and retirement through a friend. Well, it's no secret that veterans suffer from not only physical and visible injuries, but invisible injuries as well. Through my business, I was able to partner with Hometown Hero Outdoors, where I could not only be involved in what they do, but help to raise money for their awareness and their mission. My first event was actually their first annual banquet, where I provided several raffle items that were used to raise money. At their event, I got to know many of the staff and leadership in the organization, got to hear stories and the lives that were changed and affected due to bringing veterans and first responders outdoors. As many veterans and first responders, we are thrown into a world of nonstop action, and then our career ends, or we retire and it all stops. Many times we don't know what to do with ourselves because the fast-paced lifestyle stops, and rather than turning to alcohol or substances that numb feelings of depression and hopelessness, HHO is there with an outlet. It's an organization that takes people outside in the element, whether you're hunting or fishing, and not only actively doing something to keep your mind and body busy, but you're connecting with fellowship and like-minded individuals. Finding an organization like this was extremely important. It shows not only that the state and service supports those that have served. I urge you to support this organization, not only for people like myself, but for others to come. This organization puts 100% of their money into 100% of the people that need these resources. By supporting, you are ensuring that both physical and mental health of all service members can be reached. I, like many, can say that I am standing here, no pun intended, with this much confidence, had Hometown Heroes not been a part of my life. The impact that they had on myself and my family is unmeasurable, and this organization should feel proud to be supported and allocated with funding to continue to grow their reach in Minnesota with other service members. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. And we have two more. If you could, please just keep it to 2 minutes each.
Thank you, Chairman Newton, the rest of the members of the committee. I'm Jason Keene, former Army Ranger at 2nd Ranger Battalion, Charlie Company. I'm also a Red Bull. I spent 18 months in Iraq, earned a Bronze Star while I was there. And I also supported Operation Enduring Freedom in Sirlik, Turkey. HHO, to me, it's where the community that we have in the military, we leave military, it's gone. When we get into HHO, we have that community rebuild. Most of us vets feel that people don't understand us. We carry a cross that other people just shouldn't have to understand. That's where the mental health part of HHO really comes in, because we can take all the members and we get together, and sometimes it's fishing, but sometimes it's talking about that base that we all share in common. Sometimes it's that struggle that we all share in common. You know, it just takes that little bit of stress out of our lives. For me, I came down sick after being on quite a few fishing trips with the group, but off the side, I got sick and ended up spending 2 months in the hospital. HHO stepped in after me getting sick and helped my family move into the house that we had built. They helped my wife get all the veteran services that they had, because there's all sorts of connections inside there beyond the hunting and the fishing. The biggest thing for me, the camaraderie and helping the family even outside of that, really helped my mental health trying to go through that. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Keene. And I believe it's Shane Libera.
Correct, Liberta. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee, for having me here today. And I'm last, and I'll make it quick. Today, I know for sure I'm the only one of my friends here to speak who's not worn a uniform to serve the country or our communities. For 20 years, I wore a suit in corporate America. Forgive the casual dress, those suits don't fit any longer, and I don't need to wear them anymore. So just a few years ago, I left that career to care for a sick child, who's now thriving, by the way, and I never looked back. With the support of my incredible wife, I took the path of small business ownership, and I'm still grinding away to live that dream. From the beginning of this phase of my life, one of the many pleasures of being my own boss is the opportunity to choose where those funds go. Certainly, it starts with bills and the bank and the taxes and everything else. After that, we hope there's enough left to help fuel good work somewhere. At that decision point, we were blessed to meet Chris and the Hometown Heroes Outdoor Organization. They were coming into their own about the same time my journey as a business owner was doing the same. A few of those extra dollars needed a home, and it was quickly that I realized HHO was going to be a part of that. And as you said, there's 7 million charities in this country, so I don't take this moment lightly to speak with you or why we chose them. So now the why. So again, I never wore a uniform. Therefore, my body and mind were spared the damage of war. However, damage of war didn't spare my family. My grandfather, Lyle Froland, served in World War II. He returned to Fargo, North Dakota, where it was apparent his body was largely unharmed, but his mind was not. My mother shared stories about waking up to him screaming from his bedroom in the middle of the night. Those screams were only silenced by the bottle of E&J on the top shelf of his closet. Eventually, these screams broke apart his family, and he drank himself to death alone in Fergus Falls. The scars of that war didn't stop with him. My mother was unable to maintain her marriages. I made a painful decision to remove her from my life in 2016 so that I could stand between my children and the mental damages she continues to carry with her. In the late 90s, I met one of the most incredible men in my life, my father-in-law, Galen Engelmeyer. Galen served in the jungles of Vietnam. Like many, he came home to a largely ungrateful, unempathetic country. As a testament to the man he is, he put his head down, went to work. He delivered mail in St. Paul, drove school buses, and cleaned a bar at night. Nobody can still quite explain when it is he slept. But he and his wife, Lana, raised 3 beautiful daughters and have 4 grandchildren. When Galen retired from the post office a few years ago, he received full pay for over 2 years because he'd never taken a sick day. A few years ago, I was in a fishing boat talking to Galen about his retirement future and what he planned to do with the surprisingly comfortable savings he'd somehow accumulated. Assuming he'd talk about a new boat or some travel, he slammed me again with the character I'd grown to love and appreciate. He sighed and he said, "Well, nobody was ever there for me, and I will be there for my granddaughters. I'm going to help them go to college." The pride in which he expressed that was muffled to me by the beginning of his sentence, "Nobody was there for me." I realized that would be the same thing my grandpa would say if he was still here. Nobody was there for him. When I met Chris and the crew at Hometown Hero Outdoors, that landed heavily on me. These people are being there for men and women who need them. They show up with passion and empathy and love in a genuine mission to help put those people back together, and let them know they aren't alone. Furthermore, in this day of screens, devices, they get them outside, away from the stresses and trappings of modern life. Many being able to engage with the passion they've long had, making it even more conducive to opening up and receiving the support they want to give. Or the first time being outside and experiencing a whole new world where they can let it go and bond with those who understand their struggles. They are there for them, and that's why I support HHO through my businesses and my family, and I hope you do with the request before you today.
Good. Thank you, Mr. McLaren. Thank you, Representative Hill. This is an informational hearing only, so we'll hang on to the bill. We don't know if there's going to be any funding available this session, so if there is, you'll have an opportunity to bring it back up. So with that, thank you all, and I've got a couple of questions here. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and you answered one of the questions, which was we don't have budget targets that I know of, and if we were going to. So that answered one of the questions. The second question would be to your treasurer. I was looking in your 990, and it said something like $300,000 is your operating budget. If you were to receive $250,000 per year, could you efficiently and effectively utilize those funds? You'd almost double the impact of your organization. Can you give us a roadmap as to what you would do with those funds, please?
Yes, and thank you for asking. And we would definitely be able to leverage those funds. We would increase our outdoor activities, and we would do more outreach to get more members into the outdoors should we receive those funds.
Thank you. Representative Bliss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just real briefly, I understand this is an informational-only meeting, and not that there's anything nefarious on this bill, but I believe we didn't meet the three-day deadline or three-day. So, and again, there's nothing nefarious. It's a good bill. I appreciate it. But just maybe next time we can try to respect the process a little bit more, and I hope we don't see more of this. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I discussed that with legal counsel. Thank you. Good. Thank you all. And I would like to ask Representative Knudsen to please come forward with her bill. And this is House File 3505. This also is an informational-only bill, and it's one of many bills that deal with the property tax exclusion for spouses of deceased veterans. Representative Knudsen, if you would identify yourself and tell us about the bill, please.
Me?
Either one. Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Newton, and thank you, committee, for letting me be here to present to you House File 3505 for an informational hearing. This bill relates to disabled veteran homestead property exclusion. This program was created in 2008. At the time, the exclusion amounts were $300,000 for a veteran that was 100% disabled and $150,000 for a veteran that was 70% disabled. These numbers, these amounts have not been changed since its creation, which was 16 years ago. Everybody knows that the housing market has gone crazy and the costs have increased dramatically over the last few years. So I think it's only right that we update these numbers. This bill does simply that. It updates those limits for 100% disabled to 400,000 and 70% disabled to 200,000.
Good. Thank you, Representative Knudsen. Mr. Dilks, I see you're here with us.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Trent Dilks, Legislative Director for the Disabled American Veterans Department of Minnesota. And I appreciate the opportunity to speak to this one. For the past 9 years, this has been an on and off issue that we've worked on property tax wise, and this is the first time we've really taken a push last session a little bit to try to address the 16 years since the amount has been adjusted. The DAV and the Commander's Task Force supports the increase of these amounts. If you've seen our priorities, or if we have a chance to talk more about them, we would like to see that expanded, something that fixes this to essentially inflation and some of the other things, but we're fully supportive of increasing to the 200 and 400 amount. For informational purposes, I've put together some numbers because over the last almost decade, I've heard some talk about this, and obviously sometimes there's some pushback. So I ran some numbers. I assure you, I took college algebra 4 times, so I'm very good at numbers. If we look at the largest counties, as we get feedback from Hennepin County, We look at a total net property tax of $3.4 billion, and we have not heard objections from Hennepin County, who is the largest recipient of property tax and the largest amount of veterans exclusions. Another point that has been brought up to us is, well, how about the impact on rural counties? So I took Martin County in southern Minnesota. It's where I grew up, Truman, and I decided to dig into their numbers. Their numbers are $39 million in net property tax in Martin County. If we go above average home ownership and every veteran that gets this exclusion is over the median amount of property tax in Martin County, so I erred on the side of caution. It's $105,000 out of $39 million that is shifted, not cut, shifted. It comes out to about 0.3%, 0.3%. It is the total cost. It's even less when we look at increasing the amounts because the median home value in our less impacted rural counties is below this. So we're really talking more about the less concerned major metro, seven county area. And so it's even lower if we looked at it as an increase, but the total count of the shift, 0.3%, 0.3% is the total cost of this program. So as we hear talk about, should there be a state offset? Should these other things happen? At 0.3%, the median homeowner taxpayer in Martin County, my old home county, that is $3.37 shifted. $3.37. So I don't think we're talking about a large shift. As far as the impact, when we're below half of 1%, to look at maybe having to get some sort of general fund allocation or something like that in a shift at 0.3% doesn't seem necessary to us, is not in the CTF's position. Again, we've argued all along that the shift in tax is not great. The burden is not shifted terribly to the other taxpayers, and the largest impacted counties who would have homes at above the 300,000 or 400,000 or at the 400,000 level or above the 200,000 level are lessened outside of the seven county metro. So we don't expect much cost there. As far as the state's concerned, the fiscal note that was done on this last time, it's a cost savings to the state because of some of the property tax rebates. So 0.3% shift and a savings to the state, we think is something we should be able to move forward with to keep veterans in their homes.
Thank you, Mr. Dilks. I see we have another testifier. If you're not,
yeah, and I had the honor, Chair Newton, committee members, thank you for having me. I served with Mr. Dilks. We had one of the longest nights of our lives together over there. We just had the anniversary for that. So I'm Brad Williams. I'm a licensed real estate agent in Minnesota. I'm also a licensed mortgage broker. I served in the Minnesota Army National Guard. I am retired from that now. And the benefit for this bill for the veterans that are already in the home is apparent. But as a realtor, I just wanted to bring to your attention briefly, because I understand the time constraint, is housing is very unaffordable right now. I mean, we're getting about a 3.5% to 4.5% year-over-year appreciation in value, and it's very hard. The VA loan is the best loan program in the country. However, veterans that are using the VA loan are actually at a disadvantage because they're competing against buyers that are paying cash, buyers that are putting 20% down. So they need to be more aggressive in their offering, you know, to the sellers. And one of the factors that goes into this is like, well, what's their payment going to be? Now, I'll do a calculation if I know the veteran has a 70 to 100% disability rating so that they know when the time comes that they're going to have some relief on that. But a $1,000 decrease in their annual property taxes increases their buying power by about $10,000 to $15,000 on an offer. So now that's up to them to spend, but I just wanted you to understand that from a real estate perspective, what that does for them to be able to do. And as far as the numbers, I know Mr. Dilks had it. I think, you know, the last report that I saw, that was a governor's report on Veterans Affairs, I think there was 3,481 roughly that were receiving the 100% disability. I don't have the number on the 70%, but I can tell you that this is a conversation that veterans are having about the benefits that they receive. And another thing that I hear a lot, because I work with veterans from other states as well, they're constantly going to a website and they're looking at what are the benefits that Minnesota has for disabled veterans or what other states have. And now I'm not well versed in this, but I do know and I hear that there is going to be an initiative coming up in Minnesota about essentially driving people to this state.
You know, and who else would we want more than other veterans from other states that are going to know what our benefits are for disabled veterans? Because I can tell you, they'll tell you what they are in other states. They already know that, and they're looking there. And so I said I'd be brief, a little bit longer than I wanted to be, but thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Are there any questions? Representative Weens, I know you, I think you were working on a bill as well for this, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, Chair, thanks for calling me out, and I'll be brief. I think what I'd like to say is we tried this last year, and we didn't quite get to where we wanted to be, and I really appreciate what you're doing, Representative Knutson, as well as Mr. Dilks and Mr. Williams, for testifying today, because this encourages veterans to remain in Minnesota and bringing veterans. And veterans are great citizens, pay their taxes, done their duty. You want them as a neighbor. Thank you.
Representative Hudella.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I know we're out of time, but Representative Knutson, when this law was passed 16, 18 years ago, do you know the difference now between a $300,000 home then versus now?
Sure. Thank you for the
Representative
question.
Representative Knutson.
Oh, sorry, yep. Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hudella. Yeah, so the purchasing power of $300,000 in 2008 today is equivalent to about $29,000. And the benefit increase here would be $400,000. So $429,000, we're still under that. And then $150,000 in 2008 is the equivalent purchasing power today of $214,000. So still under that as well. But.
Thank you, Representative Hudella. Nice softball.
Thanks. I had one other super short follow-on, Mr. Chair, and this question would be for Mr. Williams. In your opinion, would passing this bill make it easier for veterans to qualify and be competitive for a home loan?
Absolutely. It will have a direct effect on their ability to purchase a home, without question.
Thank you all. And this bill, it is informational, but we're going to hang on to it. I might say the bill passed in the Senate last year. So it's still active, and it's subject to change and modification. We do have several different bills all roughly doing the same thing, just keeping up with inflation. So thank you very much, Representative Knutson, Mr. Dilks, and Mr. Williams. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
And with that, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you all. Okay.